Welcome to All Together Now. This is Eleanor Lacaine. Some Republicans, including the current occupant of the White House, are trying to reverse progress made addressing climate change. Trump wants us to renege on U.S. pledges to the Paris Climate Agreement, remove regulations on coal emissions, and weaken or even eliminate the Environmental Protection Agency. This week, the president signed an executive order rolling back the Clean Power Plan, President Obama's key measure to fight climate change by limiting carbon emissions from power plants and requiring states to cut overall emissions. We should fight these moves by the Trump administration and Republican Congress and see them as a call to action for all citizens. But despite these obstacles, strong action by leaders in government, business, and public interest groups continue to address climate change and protect our environment. Some mayors, governors, and business leaders are carrying forward with plans to cut carbon emissions. About 30 states have set standards requiring power companies to sharply increase their use of renewable energy. In California, Governor Jerry Brown recently signed a bill requiring the state to cut greenhouse gas emissions 40% below 1990 levels by 2030. In Illinois, Republican Governor Bruce Rauner signed the Future Energy Jobs Bill, which will channel over $200 million a year into renewable energy investment and require utilities to cut greenhouse gas emissions 56% by 2030. So the state of Illinois is requiring a greater reduction in emissions than what Obama's Clean Power Plan would have required. While the coal industry employs about 65,000 people, the renewable energy industry now employs 10 times as many workers, about 650,000 jobs and growing. The move to renewable energy is unstoppable. Moreover, we have powerful allies in business working every day to create a more just, healthy, and sustainable future. On this show, we've interviewed leaders in green business, such as the Director of Sustainability for the Stonyfield Yogurt Company, the CEO of Seventh Generation, the number one company for natural household cleaning products, and the Ceres network of investors, companies, and public interest groups that accelerate the adoption of sustainable business practices to build a healthy global economy. Progress in fighting and even reversing climate change requires all of us to take action. One of the great hopes for the environmental movement is the awareness and action among youth. Young people understand the importance of protecting and restoring the environment on which all life depends. Our guest today is one of the champions helping to bring youth into the environmental movement at this critical time. Angelou Azilo is the founder and CEO of the Greening Youth Foundation, dedicated to working with diverse, underserved, and underrepresented young people to encourage them to become enthusiastic and responsible environmental stewards, nurturing a connection between young people and nature, and helping them find pathways to careers in conservation. Angelou Azilo, welcome to All Together Now.
Well, hello, Eleanor. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, well, you're doing fabulous work, and I want our listeners to know all about it. So let's start by focusing on the mission of Greening Youth Foundation. What are you trying to do with the organization?
For sure. And I just want to say also that that was the perfect pronunciation of my name, so that was awesome.
Thank you. I've been practicing.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. And I'm really, you know, thrilled to be able to share just the work that we're doing at Greening Youth Foundation. And our mission here is engaging underserved and underrepresented youth and young adults while connecting them to the outdoors and careers in conservation. Our entire focus is really showing a generation of young people that and people that typically are not, you know, at the table around this discussion of conservation and the environmental sector, that there is an entire field out there that not only is in desperate need of innovation and new ideas and so forth, but that, you know, presents career pathways for them that maybe they have not explored. So really, really excited to be here and to further this discussion with you, Eleanor. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Well, I love that you're bringing the young people into conservation and making the connections with nature. I mean, I'm pretty much a city girl myself, and it took me a long time before I, you know, kind of got outdoors. But it's just, it can be a real life-changing experience to be out in the forest or out in the fields and mountains and hiking, and you're really building that connection between youth and nature, which is so important. Now, how did you come up with the idea to create the Greening Youth Foundation?
Sure. So, yeah, as you said, you know, that connection with nature and just, you know, being outdoors and connecting in parks and forests and just backyards and local parks. It was something, as a child, I grew up in Jersey City, New Jersey, a very densely populated city in New Jersey, in fact. But my parents had about 54 acres of land in upstate New York. And every summer, we would go upstate to experience this home, this little modest home, but it was on this vast amount of land, you know, just forested area. And I just remember it was such a special experience for myself and my two siblings. I'm the youngest. We would, you know, pick berries, and, you know, there was like a snake, a little resident snake that lived on the side of the house. You know, there was this whole process of what we had to do when we came to the house first time for the summer, and there were all these bats there. You know, from, you know, there was so much that I learned as a young child at this place, and my siblings as well. So, you know, it was really critical for me to growing up, you know, and I didn't even know it at the time how transformative it actually was to me. But as I look back on my life, so then fast forward, you know, I pursue a legal career, so I'm actually a trained attorney, but, you know, was really wanting to do something to give back and to connect with the outdoors. And as I started looking for work to do in the public interest sector, and in fact, while I was at law school at the University of Florida, is where I really, my eyes started opening a little bit to the environmental world through the Center for Governmental Responsibility, which is interesting with, you know, how you opened up our discussion. But, you know, through that fellowship is really how I just kind of started digging into the environmental sector. And then from there, worked with the Trust for Public Land and other various not environmental nonprofits. And then that's where I saw that there were so few people that looked like me, you know, that, you know, I really, at the time, it was new because, you know, it comes from, you know, my parents are both college educated, you know, so I come from a lot of family members and friends of the family that, you know, have always talking to us about different careers and different pathways, but no one had ever talked about, you know, this conservation field, that could be a very viable and enjoyable career pathway that I might want to explore, especially since they knew that I love the outdoors. But I couldn't ignore the fact that at all of these different conferences and within these NGOs and so forth, that there were just so few people of color. So upon, you know, fast forward once again, after, you know, coming to Spelman College, you know, in which you learn there, and love my alma mater to death, because you learn not just sisterhood at Spelman College, but just the importance of, you know, really making the change that you want to see. You know, just not watching and sitting back on the sidelines and saying, I wish that this could happen. Maybe somebody will get around to that. So having all of that in my head, you know, when I came back to Atlanta, because my dad was ill and he's fine now, thank goodness, you know, working on the Beltline, realized that something needed to be done, not just for engaging people of color around the environmental sector and have them more involved in that discussion, but also for youth. Because that's something that you really, you know, noticed during that time, particularly 10 years ago or so, is that, you know, young people, particularly in communities of color, are not really, they weren't aware of, you know, the stewards that they could be and the contributions that they can make to this planet that we live on. So that was really the impetus for Greening Youth Foundation.
Yeah, and a lot of the youth, you know, not only can't see how they can make a career around nature, they're not connected with nature in any way. I mean, so many of our youth are living on their cell phones and their TVs
really?
And their computers.
It's
and
really bad. It's
we're going
really
kind of
bad.
In the opposite direction.
We are, Eleanor, and I mean, I don't know if you've heard of a book called Last Child in the Woods. It's Richard Lewes is actually the writer. And it's really, it's called Nature Deficit Disorder. And it's actually a really sad but true thing that, you know, there's a correlation now. And, it, you know, there's been research that shows these young people that are so tied and attached to these digital devices that, you know, there really is starting to be, we can see how it's affecting their, you know, growth and, you know, in terms of personality and their ability to, you know, stay alert and all sorts of things they're coming that they're discovering. So, you know, people say it kind of in jest, kind of saying, oh, well, you know, everyone's so connected to their devices. And it's really hard to fight that urge, but we really, as a society, need to just kind of put down the phone sometime, particularly with these children, encourage them to put these phones down and get outdoors, get out to their park. Go in their backyard, climb a tree, do something as opposed to just playing video games.
Right. And, you know, there are in many places, there's the backyard, there's the local park. I mean, you don't necessarily have to go to upstate New York or some, you know, big park, national park, but, you know, it's near us somewhere, there's nature. There's fresh air, there's sun, there's
exactly.
Playground to go to, something.
And it's funny you should say that, Eleanor, because you're so right. I mean, national parks are obviously, they're beautiful and they are, you know, America's greatest outdoors, I mean, greatest idea, one of the best ideas. But, you know, what I find is we have to really, you know, in talking to these young people about the importance of the outdoors, you know, we have to be aware that there's a lot of competing factors, you know, and we have to show that, you know, these digital devices, you know, we know that they're important and that, you know, this is all technology has advanced and so forth, but, you know, there are really a lot of, there's a lot of value in getting them outside and connecting them to the outdoors.
Absolutely. And how do you do that? I mean, there's such an emphasis on the technology and being connected that way with the social group. And how do you get the youth to kind of turn off the technology and tune into nature?
That's a great question. I think it shouldn't be as hard as it really is, but it is pretty tough. And, you know, because of these competing factors. So, you know, what we do, when we first started this foundation 10 years ago, we focused on fun. You know, Ruth Kitchen, she was our education director, and she kind of founded our public school initiative, the environmental education portion, with me. And we said, and we knew at the time that we would not get these young people's attention if we didn't make it fun. If we went to them and just started talking about alternative energy and the importance of composting and organic material and reduce, reuse, recycle without making it interesting and engaging and fun, then it wouldn't work. So that was really how we kind of started it. And although our organization has really, you know, it's grown, obviously, which we're very happy about, and we have now a focus on career, you know, training and learning about these different trajectories, I still make sure we fight to keep that environmental education literacy, that type of programming there, because I believe if we're not starting with these young ones and teaching them about, you know, the contributions that they can make and doing it in a fun way, that they're not going to, by the time that they become teenagers and, you know, we're looking for, you know, the next leaders of the Park Service or the state parks or whatever the land management agency is, it's going to be hard to find them, to even get them interested in the internship position to start with. So, you know, that whole you know, we have to, every step of the way, we have to keep them engaged. So, you know, it's not an easy feat. So you're absolutely right in saying, well, how do you do it? And then another thing that we do is we make sure that we incorporate technology. So, you know, we used to say, you know, when you come on a camping trip with us, you have to leave your cell phones. You can't bring them, you know, leave them in the car with your parents or, you know. But now we realize that, you know, we have to embrace this technology. You know, we need to do it in a way so that it's not going against our interests and what we're trying to do with these young people. But at the same time, there's value with this technology, and we can't deny that. So we do BioBlitz, you know, we do all sorts of things where we incorporate apps into their outdoor experiences.
That's really interesting. Was the idea that they would have to cut off from the technology kind of a deal breaker that turned a lot of the youth off and made them not want to come?
It depends on the age. I would say that for the younger ones, obviously, who aren't as tied yet to those devices, it was much easier. And that seems to be, you know, that's the age that a lot of environmental organizations focus in on, is kind of like the fourth graders and so forth. But I would say for the teenagers, yeah, it was kind of, you know, a deal breaker. We definitely, you know, wouldn't have their undivided attention, even though they didn't have the device. It was strange. It was like they were going through withdrawal or something. So,
wow,
you know,
that's really interesting.
Exactly, and it plays right into this nature deficit disorder and that explanation of what it does to them and how it makes them so dependent on it. So we found that, you know, allowing them to utilize these devices alongside their experiences, in some cases, particularly for the teenagers and the young adults, actually helps us so that we can enhance the experience for them.
Oh, that's fabulous. And you mentioned the environmental literacy. Is that part of what you're doing? You know, I know you've got a public school initiative for kindergarten through 12, I think. And tell us a little bit about what that public school initiative is.
Sure. The public, like I said, when we first started off, and actually just as a footnote, I have, you know, because of my love, and then I had a son. I have two sons now, and my youngest son was five. He was in kindergarten. And I realized that at the local school, nothing was really being done to, and he is 15 now, so this is 10 years ago, nothing was really being done to, you know, teach the young students about Earth Day. So it was my idea to do this whole Earth Day lesson. And of course, the teachers were very receptive to that. So I put together, you know, like a little, I found a book and some, you know, a craft to do with them, and then just kind of talk to them about, you know, different things as it related to the environment. So, you know, others heard about it within the school, and then that's how it kind of grew, you know, the whole environmental education program grew that way. And so the public school initiative program now is something that we've kind of modified the program since we started it, in that we were the ones, Ruth and myself, and then it grew to AmeriCorps members, you know, kind of implementing the program at different schools. And now we actually engage college students, train them and certify them. And then they implement our program in K through 12 schools, so public schools, but also Boys and Girls Clubs and recreation centers. So that's that's our PSI program.
So you train the college students to then go into the K through 12 and teach about environmental education?
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, our Youth Conservation Corps program, which is another one of our, so we started with the public school initiative program, and then we moved into Youth Conservation Corps program. And when we responded to an RFP that the Department of Interior had put out to provide paid internship opportunities for young adults to work on federal lands across the country, starting with the National Park Service. So that is, you know, our core program that we do with the Forest Service, Fish and Wildlife, BLM, Bureau of Land Management, NOAA, and Bureau of Reclamation. So, you know, our internship program, I would say, is really what we're known for across the country. And, you know, the students at different colleges and universities and tribal institutes, they are aware of this and they come to us because they know that that is our space. So with the environmental education work, it made sense for us to continue with the training of these college students and providing them, the ones that may be interested in pursuing a career as an environmental educator or a teacher, you know, giving them the skills that they need and the experience that they need. So through this internship and training and certification, they're able to put that experience on their resumes. And then in the end, there have been some cases where through this exposure, they realize that they actually want to be a teacher. They actually want to continue doing this work once they're in college or for the ones that are already in college upon graduating. So it's really, you know, once again, providing an avenue, a trajectory for different careers in this conservation space.
That's fantastic. So you provide, sounds like a wide array of internships for the young people. Are they all in college or recent college graduates, or do you have some for the non-college-bound people also?
Yeah, so another great question, Eleanor, because what I realize is that, yeah, so we do have quite a few. Like this last summer, we probably placed about 400 interns with various land management agencies. This year, it may be a little less due to, you know, various reasons, you know, with the administration and so forth. But for the most part, it's still a very, you know, strong program that we're able to really expand on, and our partners are very excited about the work that we do together. But I couldn't ignore the fact that there's a large part, a portion of the demographic that we serve, which is underserved in diverse communities, in which they're not going the college route for whatever reason. So, you know, they want to do something. They want to trade. They want to do something with their hands. They want to work in the outdoors. So that's when we birthed our Urban Youth Corps program. And that program really focuses on 18 to 25-year-olds, you know, and connecting them to providing them with intensive training and kind of similar to the CCC, you know, the conservation service, the core of, you know, Theodore Roosevelt's age of when, you know, we just really wanted to connect people to outdoor projects that, you know, provided jobs and money for individuals and their families, but also help with some of the infrastructure, and in this case, environmental degradation, different things that are going on. So we're, you know, part of the 21 CSC Conservation Service Corps. And, you know, so our Urban Youth Corps program works very much in that way, in that we provide these young adults with opportunities to learn a trade and then put them on projects in which they're able to get paid for the work that they do and acquire a skill in the process.
That's awesome. You're doing amazing work there. And now, talk a little bit about, so am I right in thinking here that the Urban Youth Corps program is for the ones not college-bound, but they learn a trade, earn some money, and maybe have a career path laid out, and that the Conservation Corps is more the college, in college, or recent grads of college?
Yes, exactly. So the Urban Youth Corps, and the thing is, although in some cases, in fact, it's happened, about 20%, I'd say, of the crews that have gone through our program and have worked on a particular project, through the exposure and the wraparound services that we provide in connection to other programs, we have found that some of the students, some of the young people then say, you know what, I want to try to get into college. I want to, you know, go to a community college and maybe eventually, you know, a university. So it just, you know, it's amazing by, you know, showing this connection and the providing support for these young people, how it just opens up their minds to what the possibilities can be. So I think it does a lot of, it restores hope.
Right. Well, hope and a motivation for going through the learning. I know my own daughter had some learning challenges with the attention deficit disorder and dyslexia, and it was a real struggle for her in school, she was like, I'm not going to college. I don't want to have adults yapping at me and lecturing me. She wanted to go into a trade, so she started learning carpentry as a carpenter's apprentice.
Right.
So I always felt if there was something that captured her interest in terms of, say, the environment or nature or animals, that then she would have a motivation strong enough to help her get through the extra challenges she had in learning in a classroom. And it sounds like you've got some of that happening with some of the youth from the Urban Youth Corps coming in. They get an internship, learn some skills, and then go, hey, you know, I'm really fascinated by this. I'd love to learn more about, you know, biology or ecology or land use management or something. And you're giving them that inspiration and motivation to get through the challenge of actually getting a college degree.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You just completely described our motivation behind this program. And actually, and Eleanor, we're really excited about this program that we have going right now in our Urban Youth Core program that is in partnership with the Tree Care Management Training Alliance. So usually when we do our Urban Youth Core program, we have a theme of whatever we're training them for, whatever trade that we're hoping that they will acquire at the end. So sometimes it's urban agriculture, sometimes it's landscape management, you know, sometimes it's carpentry. Sometimes it's historic preservation. It depends. But recently, we have been approached by the tree care industry, and they're having an issue, particularly here in Georgia, but actually nationwide, with their labor and their workforce and not having enough people pursuing those types of careers so that they could even fulfill, contracts and deal with, you know, the tree canopy, you know, issues and just the maintenance that's needed for trees, particularly, you know, in states like Georgia. So, you know, they're saying they're turning away business. And I, you know, upon meeting us, you know, we're like, well, we have so many people that are in need of a trade and of, you know, just to learn about different opportunities. So through that conversation, we have created our tree care management training program. And basically, what that is we have a cohort of 20, and we are providing them with training. We start off with, you know, soft skill training. So they're learning everything from financial literacy, professional development, cultural awareness, and believe it or not, they have coaches. So they're having a life coach that's working with them, deal with some of the decisions that they make on a daily basis. And then the tree care industry has provided us with a trainer that comes in that's training them on stump removal, stump grinding, tree climbing, all the different groundwork, all the different careers within the tree care industry. So in the end, not only will these young people have this trade and be able to, you know, look to this as an area and be exposed to this area, but, you know, at the end of this, the 12 weeks, there's a graduation, and then there's a career fair. So they are actually, this tree care industry is so excited and interested that not only have they invested and are helping, you know, to put this program together, they're then saying, at the end, we will hire your cohort. So we will give them jobs because that's how bad we are in need. So, you know, that we're about 2 weeks away from graduation for this inaugural class, and we are really excited. So I just want to put out there that, you know, for anyone who's interested in supporting this type of work, Greener Youth Foundation really would welcome that because we're seeing lives being changed. But not only that, they are, you know, now seeing themselves as contributing members of society. And the tree care industry is happy because they have workers now, people that, you know, are now pursuing careers in tree care management. So it's a win-win-win all around.
That's fantastic. And if any of our listeners are interested or have a relative or friend who's interested, it's the Greening Youth Foundation at gyfoundation.org, a fabulous website, by the way. It's really very beautifully done. I love the colors. I love so user-friendly, very well done. And
our
I am
tech, Nothing to it, right? I'd be happy to hear that.
So I'm delighted at the way you formed this partnership with this tree care management group. And when you mentioned, by the way, that the interns who get involved in it have life coaches, do you provide the life coach, or is that something coming out of the tree care group?
No, that is actually a part of, we call, when the young people have gone through our program, we call them gifted. So they're GYF trained and certified and trained, educated, and developed, sorry. But yes, so that's a part of that program where we realize that one of the things that has been necessary is providing them with coaches. You know, all of the, you know, top executives have life coaches. You know, people are really understanding the importance of having, you know, someone that just kind of talks you through issues and just so that you can touch base, you know, whether it's a monthly basis, a weekly basis. So we kind of said, why don't we do that for these young people? Provide them with, they really need coaches, and, you know, they need someone to kind of say, all right, this is a situation, although this is happening in your personal life, you know, this is why it's important to kind of, at this time, stay focused on, you know, your job and your work, and just talking them through what types of decisions they should make based on different scenarios and not letting outside influences affect their decisions. So we have engaged Resonate with Adrian. So this is a coach that has been, you know, does really innovative work with young people, which is kind of groundbreaking for that industry, because going in, working with groups of young people and providing them with those coaching skills have shown that, you know, they're able to transform their lives with a little bit of assistance. So that's exactly what we've been providing.
Absolutely. I think that's a brilliant idea as to providing the coaches for the young people. I mean, it is definitely a trend now happening. We've seen it for a long time with athletes having coaches. The Olympic champions all have coaches.
Right.
The professional athletes all have them, and now it's moved into the executive sphere, and it's kind of branching out into a lot of different places. But I love that you're having coaches for the young people, and, you know, parents, I'm sure, try to do what they can, but we all know what happens. You know, young people hit the teenage years, and they don't want to listen to their parents. So,
Despite best intentions, exactly.
If you need coaches, by the way, I have friends who are coaches, and actually a friend of mine was the president of the International Federation of Coaches. So if you're looking at coaches to kind of help out, let me know, and I might be able to connect you in to some. And
okay.
So I want to get
back to the...
Yeah. So, yeah, just let me know, and we'll follow up on that. Now, I love that you're such an amazing, wonderful person, and you're smart and articulate and committed and engaged, and you're a shining star, and you're doing so much for all these, for the young people, for the environment, and I love that you're able to form these amazing and wonderful partnerships. Now, you talked about the whole tree care group and connecting with them and forming that alliance and partnership. You've got you mentioned earlier that you placed 400 interns with land management agencies last year. Is that what's coming out of your partnership with the Bureau of Land Management?
Bureau of Land Management is one of the federal land management agencies that we work with. So there are many. So we actually started with the National Park Service, and then we moved to the USDA Forest Service, then U.S. Fish and Wildlife. Then it was, I think, from there, Bureau of Reclamation, and then National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and then Land Management. So they're kind of more of our recent partners. But you really, you know, really put you coined it when you said partnership, because, you know, that's really, especially during this time when, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty. It's really important to collaborate. I can't even underscore it enough, the importance of collaboration, you know. And, you know, as part, and I didn't mention, as an Ashoka Fellow, you know, that exposure that has been given to me through Ashoka in connection with Rachel's network, you know, that's a partnership there that has been worked wonders for a lot of, you know, people. But with Rachel's network in particular, just women who are, you know, doing amazing things in the environmental sector. So partnerships, I can just go on and on how critical they are, but actually putting them into play is really what we're seeing has worked wonders for us. Another partnership on the private side that I didn't mention is one that we recently formed with Patagonia, so the outdoor retailer, outfitter. So, you know, through Patagonia was also very interested and very forward-thinking. We kind of worked with REI in the past and have done different things. They've supported our work. They were actually the first outdoor outfitter to support our work. Patagonia now has taken it a step further, and we're working with them to place interns within their stores in all different fields within that industry. So, you know, our vision at Green Youth Foundation is really, you know, effectively changing the face of the conservation movement so that it reflects the society in which we live and that it's more inclusive and diverse. Because as you know, the population is becoming increasingly minority, you know, 2043, it'll be majority minority. So, you know, we have to really reach out to different groups of people and different communities, and because we need all sorts of innovation, you know. So diversity brings so much to the table, you know, not just because of what it creates for the workplace and, you know, how by having different perspectives and views, you know, make, you know, the work seem that much more rewarding in the end. But, you know, it's just a time that if we want to make sure we protect these public lands, that, you know, we have to engage people who are may not be as connected to them, but we have to show that these lands are their own and that they have to be vested. They have to work to protect it as well. So that goes for the outdoor retailer industry. You know, all these, this whole field is pretty homogenous. So it's really critical for us to make sure that these young people that are, you know, coming onto the scene, the millennials, and trying to decide, you know, what field, where should I bring, you know, my ideas and, you know, this, the skills and the education that I just received. We want to show that, you know, this industry, it really needs you, but also, you know, it's going to be very rewarding for you because, you know, like, for instance, you know, when I go to work at times, you know, I'm going to, you know, a park to have a meeting. You know, like I had to do a site visit at the Grand Teton. You know, we had a crew at the Grand Canyon. So, you know, it's really rewarding work. I can't even say how much. And I used to be, I don't know if I mentioned that I'm a recovering attorney.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, so, you know, not to knock attorneys at all, because I certainly, you know, I'm thankful for the law degree that I received and that skill set that, you know, I received as a result of that training. But, you know, the going to a law firm every day just didn't do it for me. And so it's just really nice and refreshing to know that these pathways exist so that, you know, you feel that, you know, you're contributing, but at the same time, you know, it's a quality of life issue as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I love the incredible range of partnerships that you've created to do this work of greening youth and all the federal agencies and the tree care people. And you mentioned Patagonia and REI as private companies that you have done or are doing partnerships with. Are there other groups you'd like to partner with in the future?
I would say that we're really, there's such a vast number of areas and sectors that, you know, aren't necessarily, you wouldn't classify them as, you know, conservation, but that are in need of really smart young people, you know, for interns or to start their career path there. So, you know, there's many more agencies, federal agencies that we're wanting to partner with, Department of Energy, Department of Defense, and so forth. These are agencies that we have not been able to quite engage as of yet. But then on the private sector, there's so many. You know, I just, you know, I can, from Google to, you know, Facebook to, you know, all of these different industries are really looking for smart young people, and particularly diverse young people that are, you know, wanting to explore different career sectors. So, you know, what we're finding is, yes, we are in the conservation natural resource management space, but we're really in the space, too, of engaging and nurturing young people and showing them, exposing options to them and providing access for them. So really, when you look at it from that perspective, you know, the sky is the limit in terms of who we can work with to provide that asset, you know, which is what these young people, that's how we view them. They're an incredible asset. So, you know, I would really welcome, you know, any entity, private or public, that may be interested in wanting to, you know, broaden their reach and, you know, just open the door a little and you know, change maybe how their view or perspective on how something gets done. The best way to do it is to bring in a different voice, you know, someone that maybe hasn't been at the table, someone that, you know, maybe you may be interested in, you know, reaching this population. Bring in, you know, an intern, allow them, or a young worker, allow them to, you know, share their ideas and expose you to their communities. That's the best way to engage a diverse audience, is to really have people within that are, that look like them.
Simply put. Right, exactly. And, you know, the research is all showing that when you have the diverse voices at the table, whether that be people of color or more women, that you're actually having a stronger organization, a stronger company, because you have the different views and represented at the table. And I'm so happy you're open to expanding in that way and kind of reframing your work, not just about conservation, but about engaging and nurturing young people into exciting careers. So we can talk later maybe, but I'm thrilled to hear you say that, because there's so many now careers in green businesses. Like we talked earlier about Stonyfield Yogurt Company and Seventh Generation. There's lots of green businesses that would love to know about you and the work and maybe connect with some of the young ones. I'm sure you have your hands full now, but I think that could be a tremendous growth opportunity if you could build your team in such a way that you could expand into that direction also.
Exactly. And one of the things that we discovered, I mentioned a little earlier with our Urban Youth Corps program, that we trained a cohort. We received support from the Food Well Alliance to train a cohort in urban agriculture. And, you know, there was such interest, and we had a great group of young people that were learning about, you know, food and how to grow food. What does the soil need to be? You know, pollinator gardens. We work with Atlanta Botanical Gardens a lot. So they were learning all of this, and then we were connecting with farmers here in Georgia in particular, and there was a need. The farmers all expressed a need to have support and more workers on their farms, but they weren't really able to pay them. So, you know, we were preparing them for these jobs, but the jobs didn't necessarily exist. But the thing is, from that story that I want to share, is that a lot of them said, you know what? How about we start our own businesses? You know, we have these skill sets now, and the interest is there. So we brought in people to talk to them about entrepreneurialism, you know, about what does it mean to start your own business? Like, do you need a business plan? You know, let's get the bank accounts together. So it opened up an entirely, as you mentioned, new door of opportunities for these young people. So, you know, we have an urban greenscape company that was formed. And then, you know, young people working on, from our Urban Youth Corps, working on a historic preservation project through the Hope Crew. That's our partner with the National Trust for Historic Preservation. Their Hope Crew, because of that exposure from that these young people had working on the restoration of some of the shotgun homes in the Martin Luther King District on Auburn Avenue, they decided that they wanted to start a business. So now, and it was all woman's crew, they were all young ladies, and after the project was over, they started a company called Three Girls and a Paintbrush. I loved it. So, you know, they saw through this exposure that, you know, wait a minute, there's a need here. And, you know, we have a lot of contacts in the community. Why don't we do this together? So that company is still very much formed. And as I understand it, they're getting contracts. So I'm so pleased. I'm like a proud mama of all of these kids.
That's great. I love to hear that. Now, you mentioned Rachel's Network, and you and I met last week at the annual meeting of Rachel's Network down in Florida. And for our listeners who haven't heard of it, it's a group dedicated to the environment and to women's leadership. So you, Anjelou, have been a fellow of Rachel's Network. Talk a little bit about how you see Rachel's Network and what your connection is and what it's meant for you and your work.
Sure. Yes, so we, so as I mentioned, as an Ashoka Fellow, which is a social enterprise organization, basically they support through this selection process, they support, I think in my year, there were 16 across the country social entrepreneurs that they support and, you know, really, you know, dive deep into, you know, what the organization is, what they're trying to accomplish. They were basically looking for people who are changing systems, you know, who are change agents. So I was so, you know, fortunate to be selected as an Ashoka Fellow in 2016 because through that opportunity, so many doors have been opened, and I've been meeting so many incredible people, like-minded people in all walks of life. So one of the opportunities that I had was to meet the women of Rachel's Network. Rachel's Network, as you said, is a group of women that are really doing amazing things in the environmental sector, but they also, you know, really applaud women. And, you know, as you know, it's from Rachel Carson. You know, that's where the name has come from, you know, and her the incredible work that she did. So, you know, through that connection with Rachel's Network, and they support some of the work that, you know, I'm doing as a Ashoka Fellow, you know, so many introductions have been made. So I was really, really fortunate to have been invited to the retreat that you all had at the Everglades. And it just was really, I don't know about you, but I just, you know, we went on this swamp tromp. Wasn't that amazing? It was so incredible. I had never, as many times anywhere as I have been to the Everglades National Park, because as you know, we have quite a few interns down there working. I had never been on a swamp tromp before.
A once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Yes, yes. So, you know, it was so, but just from that retreat alone, like I've still been, you know, talking to so many people and have been connected from, you know, to so many people in this space. So once again, we come back to collaboration and partnerships. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, people now are very, you know, they're very worried and they feel very, a lot of anxiety around, you know, what's happening in the environmental sector and, you know, in light of, you know, the administration, and there's just a lot of concern and, you know, understandably, but, you know, I feel hopeful because of the people, and maybe it's because of, you know, the people that are in my world, you know, so I'm working with all these amazing people and collaborating with them and partnering with them. Who are steadfast in, you know, with this goal of really working on engaging this next generation, because, and that's where my hope comes from. So it's really hard for me to, you know, run around and say the sky is falling, because, you know, I just believe that there's so much that we will be, that we have to benefit from as a society, you know, with this next generation that's coming. And, you know, there's so much work that needs to be done. I totally agree with that. But, you know, if we work together to achieve some of these goals, I just have no doubt as to what the future could look like.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think a lot of it has to do with what we focus on. And unfortunately, the media is focusing so much on the negativity and the breakdowns, yes, of which there are many. But as we talked about very briefly, my focus is on the breakthroughs and looking at the solutions in different sectors in society. And when you take that lens, you go, oh my goodness, you know, we have solved many of our problems already. And the key is to communicate the solutions and adapt and adopt them more widely around the country. And when we do that, we can improve life for millions of people for billions of dollars less than we currently spend. So I think it would be, you know, we want to be aware of some of the negative stuff happening so we can, you know, stop the worst of it. But at the same time, keep our eyes on the prize of the kind of country and world we want to have and be working on that as you are every day. So I think you're a living testimony. The importance of where we focus our attention really matters.
I totally agree with you, Eleanor. I'm so much a glass half full person. You know, maybe it's training, Buddhist training. I don't know what it is, but I mean, it's really hard for me to be consumed by negativity, you know, and as much as I have to stay informed, you know, it's my role, it's my job, not just as, you know, for career purposes, but just as a citizen, you know, as a mother, you know, as just someone living in this country to stay informed. But at the same time, I totally agree with you about the focus on breakthroughs, you know, because I do believe that there are a lot of positive things that should be highlighted, you know, that there are a lot of amazing things that are being done and, you know, work that's being done all over in areas that people aren't even aware of. So that's why I really am appreciative of you for, you know, and I love the name of your show Altogether Now, because, you know, it's important for us to really, you know, focus on, you know, this coming together. But shows like yours are really important because, if, you know, organizations say like ours, you know, we do this work and sometimes our head is down because there's so much work to be done and we're not really, you know, singing our own praises just so that we can share, you know, what's being done, you know, for whatever reason, just for support maybe, just for, you know, somebody to just, you know, volunteer or whatever the support may be, whatever form it comes in. So it's really important for us to work together, you know, so that, you know, those that are in places and in spaces, like in the media and having talk shows and so forth, can really highlight some of the things that are being done on the ground. So I'm really appreciative of this opportunity just to chat with you, you know, about some of the things that we're doing. And I certainly, you know, will stay, you know, engaged with you on some of the things that we talked about today, because I would love to share with your audience.
Yeah, fantastic. Good. Well, we just have a few minutes left, and I had two other questions to ask you. And the first one is, what advice do you have for a young person who's coming up now who wants to change the world?
Wow.
Or maybe even a not so young person.
I would say to be bold and to be brazen and just not, and perhaps those are the same thing. So I just really would emphasize the importance of, you know, agitation, you know, just to, you know, what is the saying that, you know, if you're always doing things that, you know, that everybody's agreeable with, then, you know, you're not really effectuating change. And we know that change is something that's necessary and, you know, something that could be welcome depending on how it's presented. So when young people come to me and they say, Miss Angelou, you know, what can I do? And I said, well, what are you passionate about? What is it that really you see that needs changing? What do you, you know, want to really say that, you know, I made a difference there? That's what you focus on, and then be bold about it. You know, don't, you know, kind of teeter around the edges. You know, just really go all in. You know, become an expert in that field. You know, learn everything there is to know about it, but not to the point where it's debilitating and slowing you down. just make sure you're the best at whatever it is that you want to change, but be bold.
I love that. And by the way, that's one of Oprah Winfrey's favorite words for describing herself.
I love that because I love Oprah.
Bold, bold. I love Oprah, too. You'll see on my Facebook page, that's my picture. I'm standing between Oprah Winfrey and Michelle Obama, two of my favorite people.
Oh, love both of them.
Yeah, great ladies. And before we sign off, I just wanted to ask, are there any upcoming events that you want our listeners to know about that they might be able to participate in?
Well, we have, there are internships all over the country, and we also have programs that we're doing internationally, which I didn't mention about. But if you happen to be in the Georgia area, we have the graduation of our tree care management trainees. But I would say, as we approach Earth Day, I would just want your listeners to really, not in a cliche way, do something for your environment today, but really think about, what they could do to, that they can continue doing throughout, the year. What habit, what social behavior could they change that they believe would make a difference in the sustainability of this planet? So, those small things, if everyone just did, I don't want this to be like this, people get very overwhelmed when they think of the requests and things that slow down climate change or whatever it is. Uh-huh. But, it's really those small acts that if we all did those small acts, then we can collectively make a difference all together.
That sounds fabulous. And for our listeners to be able to contact you about the internships or jobs or collaboration or support, what's the best way for them to contact you?
Sure. Well, as you stated, our website is www.gyfoundation.org. But they can certainly, reach out to me at Anjelou@gyfoundation.org for specific information on internships. But on the website, they will find all of the contact information. We have all sorts of social media links, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. We have all of that. So just connect. We have a pretty strong presence on social media due to Yarrow, our social media strategist. So I'm sure they can find us, but I really would urge folks to come and spend some time on our website and, just let us know what they see us doing maybe to help them in their field of work.
Fantastic. And that's all the time we have. Anjelou Azilo of the Greening Youth Foundation, thank you so very much for all your great work and for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Eleanor. Really, really enjoyed our time together today.
In case you've missed any of these programs, they're available in the archives. If you want to learn more about Breakthrough Solutions, go to thebreakthroughway.com. If you like this program, please go to iTunes and like it there. Our theme song is Let's Give Them Something to Talk About, sung by Bonnie Raitt. I'll be back 1 week from today. Thanks for joining us. This is Eleanor LaCain with All Together Now.